Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 1149 of the Juice Box Podcast. Today, the person we're calling Veronica is a 47-year-old type 1. She was diagnosed at 12 years old, and she works in a doctor's office. Today's cold wind is particularly chilling, as Veronica will talk about how the doctors in her office were drunk and high and dispensing drugs that were outside of what you might expect from an endocrinologist. Nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan. The T1D Exchange is looking for U.S. residents who have type 1 diabetes or are the caregiver of someone with type 1. All they want you to do is go to t1dexchange.org/juicebox and complete the survey. That's it. It'll take you about 10 minutes. It'll help people with type 1 diabetes. It will help you, and it will support the Juice Box Podcast. t1dexchange.org/juicebox. If you're looking for community around type 1 diabetes, check out the Juice Box Podcast private Facebook group, Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the only implantable sensor rated for long-term wear, up to 6 months, the Eversense CGM. Eversensecgm.com/juicebox. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by US Med, usmed.com/juicebox, or call 888-721-1514. US Med is where my daughter gets her diabetes supplies from, and you could too. Use the link or number to get your free benefit check and get started today with US Med. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the Omnipod 5, omnipod.com/juicebox. My daughter Arden has been wearing an Omnipod every day since 2006, and it has been a constant friend in her life with diabetes. Consistent, tubeless, and worry-free. omnipod.com/juicebox. So let's find out a little bit about you. Do you have type 1 or do you care for somebody who does?
I have type 1.
How old were you when you were diagnosed?
12.
Okay. About how old are you now?
47.
47. Okay. 22, 32, 42. Oh, 35 years ago.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
It's been a hot minute. Time flies when you're having fun.
Are you having fun?
The first couple decades were rough.
These last 15 years, it's really coming together?
I mean, honestly, yes. The technology has made things much, much easier. My highest A1C was 19.
Oh, wow.
And that was 10 years after diagnosis. So, I mean, I knew better.
Yeah, and that's just 25 years ago, which makes it like 1999, 2000-ish around there.
Yep.
Yeah, wow. You know, I get when people leave comments on things, like I get notes about it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I just saw somebody leave a comment on like a YouTube video. And the person's like, you know, I've had diabetes for a really long time. And I was very accustomed to blood sugars in the 300s and A1Cs, like as high as 12. And yeah. Then I got an Omnipod 5 and the person's like, I'm amazed at what's happening. I'm waking up. My blood sugar is like 115 in the morning, like that kind of stuff. And then I read that 20 minutes ago, and then you literally came on and said everything was a hot mess till technology got better.
Well, I got a pump in 2001, but I hate finger sticking. Like, that is the worst. Mm. And I didn't like those early CGMs that forced me to prick my finger. So I...
kind of avoided it? Did you try it at least, or no?
So I got a pump in 2001, and I've worn a pump since then. Mm-hmm. And my A1C was probably 10, 11 until the Dexcom G6 came along.
So walk me through how that happens. Is it partially because you don't want to test your blood sugar? Is it apathy? Like, where do you...
It's apathy, but like, so when I was diagnosed, I was told there would be a cure in 5 or 10 years. And I think at that point, I just kind of decided, I don't want to live 5 or 10 years with this disease. And I didn't make many plans for the future. And I got to the 10-year mark and was like, oh, what do I do now? Mm. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff. But so on a, with G6 and pumping, we were probably at 8, 9. And then with the control IQ, then it's like 6, 7.
Okay. So if you have access to the data with a mm-hmm. G6, for example, and you have a pump, so you're not shooting insulin all the time, so it's as easy as pushing a button. An 8 or a 9 A1C still says to me, I'm not really counting my carbs, I'm not pre-bolusing meals, I'm not correcting highs. Is that about right?
Yeah. And I'm not great at pre-bolusing meals. I struggle with that. And there's a lot of other things that have happened. I struggled with depression for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. Diabetes, most of us know, comes with a very generous side serving of depression. But I was able to mask it very well. And about 5 years ago, I had my first TMS treatment, transcranial magnetic stimulation. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty life-changing. But it unmasked the ADHD that has always been there. But the depression always hit it. And so now I'm learning to, like, I can finally identify the ADHD and know why I'm not good about pre-bolusing. I just forget. Like, I'll just skip a meal altogether and not even notice. So skipping a bolus is like child's play. Like, that's just how I roll.
When you said you could mask the depression, how did that work? How did you...
Like, nobody really knew the extent of the depression. Like, if you meet me face to face, I'm happy. I'm like, but there was still just this bone deep. And there were times that it would get a lot worse where I just couldn't get out of bed and couldn't function. But all of my energy would go into my work. So there was not any energy for anything else.
Do you have a thyroid issue at all?
Absolutely. That's the other side surfing.
Were you depressed prior to the diagnosis? The podcast is sponsored today by Eversense CGM. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. With Eversense, there's no need for frequent sensor changes. No more sensors falling off, fewer failed sensors, and less skin irritations. And that means more comfort. With Eversense, you only need one sensor insertion every 6 months, and there's no need for constant sensor changes, which means less hassle. There's also no need to carry extra sensors with you, so that's less stuff to worry about. And you can say goodbye to unexpected disruptions from sensors falling off or being knocked off, because the Eversense CGM is implantable, and the sensor stays comfortably in place for 6 months. The Eversense sensor is incredibly durable. And of course, that means fewer frequent unexpected sensor errors that happen before the end of the suggested wear time. But what do you really want to know about? Accuracy. The Eversense CGM performs exceptionally over its 6-month life. If you'd like more details or are interested in getting started, use my link, eversensecgm.com/juicebox. I'll be telling you a lot more about Eversense this year, so make sure you pay attention to upcoming advertisements. There, you'll learn about the implantable sensor, the smart transmitter, and their mobile application. The Eversense CGM lasts up to 6 months, eliminating the hassle and discomfort of frequent sensor insertions. Simply put, it makes managing your diabetes so much easier. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by Omnipod 5, tubeless automated insulin delivery with the Omnipod 5. Omnipod 5 is the first and only tubeless automated insulin delivery system to integrate with Dexcom G6. It's available for people with type 1 diabetes, ages 2 and above, and it features Smart Adjust technology. And Smart Adjust is watching out for you by helping to protect against high and lows both day and night. Just like the Omnipod Dash, the Omnipod 5 is tubeless, waterproof, and can be worn almost anywhere you give yourself an injection. Each pod eliminates the need for multiple daily injections. Plus, the automated insulin delivery system and CGM integration help simplify life in so many ways. If you find yourself having FOMO, fear of missing out on Omnipod, you don't need to. All you have to do is go to omnipod.com juicebox to learn more and get started today.
I don't remember much prior to diagnosis. I don't believe I was depressed. I also believe that my elementary education was unique and could easily mask ADHD. Then I went on to middle school. In sixth grade, I get diagnosed. That's a whole nother story. That is crazy.
How is it unique, that education piece that would mask ADHD?
So I went to a public school, and it was a special program that I got to choose my teachers and my classes, and there were no letter grades. I just wrote a letter home, "Dear Mom and Dad, this is what I've been working on." So the mornings were split up between language arts and math. And it was a very tiny school. There were four teachers when I started there. And I was there for 5 years. And then the afternoons, the teachers would do 2 to 3 week units teaching something that they were interested in, which, let me tell you, it makes a huge difference in education when the teacher's passionate about it. This is crazy to say, I did not know the difference between science and social studies until I was in middle school. Because get this, it's all connected.
What hippie part of California are you from exactly?
It was in the Northeast.
It wasn't California.
It was not California. Oh,
all right. I got it. I see what's happening here. Yeah. So not hippies, high-minded intellectuals.
It was a nice combination of the two.
Gotcha.
But so for an example, if we were studying monarch butterflies, we were looking at their migration patterns and how the weather affects it and the geography of where they go and calendars of when they migrate and their life cycle. And so everything is connected. Mm-hmm. And that's why when I talk to people, I talk about, well, we can look at the science of history and we can look at the history of science. And so that's why those two things have always been, they're all interconnected. There's not any difference in my brain.
All right. So is there any chance that, well, let me ask first, when did the thyroid diagnosis come?
I was 17.
Did you manage that well?
It's okay. It goes up and down. And I, you know, I'm not great about being super consistent with my doses. Right now, I have it set to where the dose is set. Well, I just changed insurance, so I have to switch to Unithroid. So that's going to be a cluster of confusion. Yeah, the dose is set so that I can miss every once in a while and not see a big impact. Mm-hmm.
All right, do you have as much trouble with that as you do with the insulin?
Not as much, I don't think.
Okay. I mean, so high blood sugars and an unmanaged thyroid could easily give you depression.
Yeah.
Yeah. But does a doctor ever tie that together for you? Like, hey, Veronica, if we take our insulin and keep our blood sugar from being high, you'll avoid this cloudy feeling. Maybe you'll feel better. Your head will be clearer. You'll be able to like live easier, like that kind of stuff.
Not in relation to the depression. Mm-hmm. You know, lack of energy in my late 20s and early 30s, they're always like, it's your blood sugar. It's your blood sugar. It's your blood sugar. And I'm like, I'm doing the best I can with what I've got. I don't know why I can't do the things I need to do. And so it was always get your blood sugar under control. And I never really believed them. I was always like, that's just a line. Like, there's got to be something else. But
the man's just trying to get you to do what they want to do.
Yeah. They're trying to manipulate. But now that my A1C is better, I'm like, I'm feeling more energetic. And my husband and I joke, and we're like, we're in the prime of our lives right now. Like, who needs your 20s or 30s? Like, this is we're loving life.
Well, that's so nice. So your knees don't hurt too bad?
Nope.
No. There you go. Quite a lot of stress happening. Okay. So you just said, I'm doing the best that I can, like referring back to the past. In hindsight, were you doing the best that you could? I'm starting to take it for granted. I am. I'm starting to take for granted that Arden's diabetes supplies just show up. But they do, because of US Med. USmed.com/juicebox. We get an email that says, you know, do you want to refill your order? And you click and say yes, and then it just comes to the door. There's not a lot to say when things are done well. Yeah, I could stand here and tell you US Med carries Omnipod 5, Omnipod Dash, Dexcom G7, G6, Tandem X2, Libre 3, Libre 2. I mean, they've got, there's so much. I'm not even listing it all. I should be. I will at the end, I promise. My point is this. It just works. And we don't talk about things enough when they just work. usmed.com/juicebox or call 888-721-1514. Get your free benefits check and get started today with the white glove treatment offered by US Med. US Med, here's what they got. Freestyle Libre 3 and 2, they got it. Omnipod Dash, yes. Omnipod 5, uh-huh. Tandem, yep. What about, have they served a million people with diabetes since 1996? They have. Better service and better care is what you're going to get from US Med, but you're also going to get 90 days worth of supplies and fast and free shipping. They carry everything from insulin pumps to diabetes testing supplies, the latest CGMs, and they accept Medicare nationwide. Find out why US Med has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau at usmed.com/juicebox or call 888-721-1514. Not the best that there is, the best that you had available to you. Does that make sense, the difference?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be really generous with most diabetics out there. I honestly believe that most people with diabetes are doing the best they can with the information they've been given, and they are sorely undereducated.
And you are as well?
I don't know that I am. Like, I am able to pick things up and piece things together. And so in my role currently, I talk a lot to people, and I'm a big advocate for experimenting with yourself. You know, I'm like, especially with the type 2s and putting them on CGMs, I'm like, experiment, see which foods drive it up. And I'm not about saying, don't ever have that food again. I'm like, minimize it, reduce it. Okay. Don't use that as much. If you notice that rice makes you go up every day, then, you know, you got to change that has to change or find a good substitute. But I think honestly, when I was, 13, I had a week of inpatient education at Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. That was when insurance would pay for such wonderful things.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't. I mean, you still struggled right out of the gate, though, right? With giving yourself insulin. You didn't like the finger pricks? Like,
I didn't like the finger pricks. So, all right, let's go to the diagnosis story. I had an afternoon paper route, and the day before I was diagnosed, one of my teachers said, "You're not looking very well. Are you okay?" And I said, "Well, my mom thinks I have something called diabetes, but I don't know. I'm going to the doctor tomorrow." I do remember drinking a ton of water. In fact, I felt like I would drink water and it would just still come out cold. Like, it was just going right through me.
It's a funny way of saying it went right through me.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I finished up my paper route that afternoon, grabbed a snack at home before my dad took me to the doctor, and my mom ran a home daycare. And so the snack of the day was Fluffernutter on graham crackers. And so that's peanut butter and fluff, marshmallow fluff. And I took an entire sleeve of graham crackers and made them into the peanut butter and fluff sandwiches and ate the whole thing before going to the doctor.
My gosh.
So yeah, my blood sugar was 800 or something.
How did your mom know you had diabetes?
She knew somebody that had it. And so she had grown kind of concerned. I was losing weight. When I was diagnosed, I was 95th percentile for height and 5th percentile for weight. Mm-hmm. And I think her cousin's kids had it as well. Okay. Had diabetes. I had never met them. I still don't think I have.
Kids. I got it. So she had seen it before a little bit and then recognized some of the symptoms from other conversations she's probably had in the past.
Yeah. Okay. And she didn't take me to the doctor. My father did, because she was at home with the kids.
Watching
at
kids.
At the daycare.
Yeah.
And so he took me to the doctor, and the doctor said, okay, she's got type 1 diabetes. This is not a death sentence. Life still goes on. So continue with your normal activities. My dad took me over to the hospital and they started an IV, and he left to go home to get mom because they only had one car because this was the 80s.
Yeah.
The candy striper came around and asked if I wanted a candy bar. I was like, oh yeah. And then she looked at my chart and she's like, you can't have candy ever again. And I was devastated. I was like, what are you talking about? So my mom came that night. This is where it gets tricky. The doctor had said, don't change, you know, your plans. Life isn't ending. Life goes on. So keep your plans. The next day, my mom flew halfway across the country to her parents on a trip that she had planned. And so I was in the hospital. She was still away. My dad learned to give me the injections and brought me home from the hospital on a Friday. And
gets tricky because you felt abandoned, or why?
Yeah, I mean, like, what parent does that?
I mean, is this a thing we have come to expect from her over time, or was it a one-off, like, weirdo thing where the doctor said, don't change your life, and she's like, well, I have a trip planned, so I guess I'll take it?
She's never been real involved with the diabetes care, and partly probably from the beginning. And you know, we joke about the abandonment issues now, but I still got a lot of work to work through with that. Mm-hmm. But that's just my work to
Your do. Parents still together?
Yeah.
Yeah. And she didn't leave you. She just went away on this trip and came back.
Yeah. She went away on the trip. She didn't tell her parents before she left. And then she got there and they could see something was wrong on her face and they were mad at her for going. Mm. But they were auctioning off the family farm that had been in the family for 150 years. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, what would I do as a parent? I don't know. Like,
you don't know? Do you have kids?
Yeah, I have one.
Well, what would you do?
I would probably stay with her.
Like, yeah, makes sense, right?
Which is funny, though, because in our family, I'm the hands-off mother. My husband works at the school that she goes to, and so they commute to and from school together, and, you know, was a teacher, and so he's more hands-on with the homework than I am.
Is that because of how you were raised, do you think? Are you mimicking what your mom did?
I don't know if I'm mimicking. I know that the way that it's set up, that they spend more time together. Mm-hmm. I also know that the elementary school experience that I had doesn't lend itself towards understanding her elementary school experience. Now that she's in high school, you know, we talk Latin, we talk biology, whatever she's taking, and, mm-hmm. you know, work through the whole,
I see.
The homework. So,
but you're not emotionally disconnected from her though.
No,
no, just some of the day-to-day stuff falls more towards your husband.
Yeah.
I gotcha. All right. What do you do for a living now?
So currently my title is point of care specialist. I work in an endocrinology office for a small distributor/pharmacy of diabetes technology. And there have been some changes in the office since I've been there. But when I started, I was paid mostly by the company I work for and a little bit by the doctor's office so that I could fall under the pump training contracts. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a certified Omnipod and Tandem trainer. And so I start people on CGMs. I get their orders going. I was doing prior authorizations. The doctor has since been acquired by a big hospital, and now I have no access to records at all. So it's changed, but it's been good.
Okay. So you work for a company that, does distribution?
Yes.
Okay.
So they're both DME and pharmacy, mostly Medicare, but soon to have some changes to that. So that's going to be good.
And what's your educational background?
Oh, gosh. I've been to four or five. And I have an associate's degree in general studies. And I have, that's an AA in general studies and an AS in nuclear medicine technology.
Okay. What did you do before this?
I worked with the homeless for a year. And before that, I was at another endocrine office as front desk, but ended up being their pump trainer and doing pretty much what I do now. So that job prepared me for what I'm doing now, but it was a cluster.
How so?
So that was during COVID. So that was right when COVID started. Mm-hmm. And they worked from home for a year and a half, everything from home. And so I went into the office every day through COVID, collecting copays and doing pump trainings and all of that. But they also, hindsight's 2020, I didn't always see it while I was there, but pretty sure there was some pretty heavy drug use and a lot of drinking. And yeah.
Well, for you or for?
For them.
For them. Okay. So mm-hmm. you're talking about the people running the office?
Mm-hmm. The providers.
Oh, okay. So the doctors were involved in a lot of heavy drug use and drinking.
Yes.
And these are endocrinologists?
Yes.
Ah. Geez. How did that impact the practice?
They were able to hide under the cover of COVID.
Oh.
And so a week before I was fired, one of them was like, oh, we love you so much. We want you to stay with us forever. You're going to be such a wonderful diabetes educator, blah, blah, blah. And I just smiled and nodded. I was seeking an exit plan at the time, but also had a home refinance in the works. The day that I got fired, the phones went out and I was in and out of the office trying to fix that. And I came back in and I could tell she was not happy with me. And she just started screaming in front of a waiting room full of patients, get the F out of my office.
You have no idea.
And then her husband had, it was a married couple that were the two providers in the office. And she charged at me at one point and he had to hold her back. And I was like, I'm gathering my stuff and I'm out. And I still to this day don't know why that happened.
Were they both using?
I am not sure. I suspect.
Okay. Did they do it in the office? Like, were they high or drunk during the day?
Once they came back from COVID, there were a number of days that we had to send her home, quote unquote, sick.
Mm-hmm.
And he would cancel his day too and take her home and care for her. And hindsight's 20/20. And I'm like, oh my. So, yeah.
Do you think that impacted the care they were giving to people?
Oh, absolutely. People, the patients absolutely adore them. Absolutely adore them. In fact, she was my provider before I got fired from working at the office. And I enjoyed her, but I knew there were some things that were off. But like, it's a very codependent relationship. They will tell the patients what the patients want to hear and do whatever the patient wants. And if the patient has any problems with the front desk, they'll say, oh, I'm so sorry, the front desk let you down. And I can't go and say to the patient, I have messaged her 15 times every day for the last 15 days, and she has not responded. She is not doing her job.
And then puts it back on the people working out front.
Right. She'll put it back on the people working up front and then play savior. So she's making this problem and then saving the patients from it so that they never abandon her.
Oh, you think that's on purpose? Like, do you think she created the problem to save the problem?
I don't think she knows any other way of operating.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Maybe somebody was pretty bad to her raising her is what you're thinking.
It's quite possible.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, gosh, I wonder how many people ever wondered if their doctor was drunk. What kind of drugs do you know?
Everything except ketamine.
So heroin?
I don't know if that was happening while I was working there.
Okay. Coke?
I don't know what was happening while I was working there. I know that hindsight and from the wine I've seen in the office and the pictures of the alcohol consumption for COVID, I know there was alcohol. I'm highly suspicious there were other drugs. She has flat out admitted to me that she's used everything except ketamine.
I see.
Another girl in the office that constantly had the heroin nod.
Like another employee?
Yes.
Like out front or a nurse in the back or something like that?
The medical assistant.
Medical assistant.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess it's easier. So, yeah.
But I grew up fairly sheltered. I didn't even know what weed smelled like until the job after that, mm-hmm. which is hysterical to me. After that, I went and worked with the homeless for a year and I absolutely adored that. So, that's where I learned about weed.
The homeless taught you about weed.
Yeah.
Doctors, more high end liquor and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's nice. Holy crap.
Oh, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Keep going. What else you got?
That's that office that pretty much sums. Oh, well, I mean, the other part of the story is I can't make a report to the state or anybody about that because I was fired and then because it would be retaliation.
Mm-hmm.
But my dentist is in the same building. And every time I go to the dentist, he says, oh, I saw her stumble into work again today. And I say, okay, I get that. I can't report her, but you can. Like, somebody has got to report her. Well, but something. He says, oh, no, that's her husband's job. Okay, whatever.
How long has that, I mean, that practice been up for over a decade?
Probably a decade or less.
Okay.
They've made the rounds in our area in different hospitals and groups, and then they made their own practice together.
Do you think you have to work there to know that about them, or do you think that's common knowledge and people just ignore it?
I think you have to work there to really understand it, but if you look on the court records, you can see the DUIs.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
Oh, and felonies. I'm sorry.
Felonies for
assaulting a police officer?
Oh, you can't do that anymore? What's the world come to? Oh my gosh. I wonder how people can go about looking into their physicians. You know what I mean?
I mean, other than knowing, like, if I look up the NPI, there's nothing. It's not until I look on the court records that I can see.
I see. Did you notice any, like, was there a decline in care that they were offering people? Like, I know you said they basically just did whatever people wanted. You call it a codependent between her and the...
I will say that was the first endo practice I worked in. There were a lot of testosterone patients that were having to go to the one blood because they were polycythemic, which means, if I'm not mistaken, that just means you're giving way too much testosterone. The other thing was, like, they were like, oh, we don't need to palpate a thyroid because the changes are so minuscule that we're just going to send them out for ultrasound anyway. So you think they were
maybe over-medicating testosterone patients?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then not doing the physical checks on thyroid that are called for.
Yeah.
And then if patients pushed for something, whether it was medically necessary or right or didn't matter, they would just kind of went with the flow to keep everybody happy, keep everybody coming back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's practicing as an endocrinologist. I don't think he's a board certified endocrinologist, but he's prescribing a whole lot of controlled substances for an endocrinologist. Like, in the other practice I'm in, they're not prescribing, other than testosterone, there's no controlled substances prescribed.
What are some examples of stuff you saw prescribed out of there?
Oxy, codone.
From your endo?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
In fact, one patient, she wasn't real old. She passed away. And apparently he joked to one of the other people in the office that it could have been his fault.
Is that something you heard third hand?
Third hand.
Okay. Like, I might have given her too much of the oxy?
I might have over-medicated her. I mean, like, she was drug-seeking.
Yeah.
But when you're using yourself...
In the game. Yeah. Game knows game. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, isn't that something?
Yeah. It is spectacular. Yeah.
This is usually the time in the interview when I tell everybody, give up. Oh, my gosh. I never know what people are going to say. So this has been something. That's an adult endocrinologist office.
Yes.
So I'm assuming plenty of type 2 patients.
Yes.
Now, these people, if they're going there for good help, they're not going to be finding it.
They care. It's just such a weird thing. I don't know how to describe it because, like, I was her patient and she did what I needed her to do and was helpful. And some patients are getting okay care and other patients are iffy. And it really depends on...
If you're oxy buddies or not?
I don't know what depends on. I have no idea. Like,
holy hell. Now, you're at a different doctor's office now?
I am.
Okay. And do you see any wrongdoing there, or is that a good experience?
I enjoy this office that I'm working at now. I like it a lot. I'm not sure I could find another endocrinologist to work with that would understand my perspective the way this doctor does.
Okay.
Because he has type 1. And so there's a doctor in the office, and there was a nurse practitioner. And at one point, after Easter last year, I had my desk drawer full of sale Easter candy. And the nurse practitioner came in and was like, "Do you have any snacks?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I opened up my drawer, and her eyes got wide, and she's like, "Oh my gosh, you're so bad." And I'm like, normally when people tell me I'm a bad diabetic, I'm like, "You're not my doctor. Leave it between my doctor and I." But I was flummoxed. Like, are you kidding me? And
so you took that as a bad diabetic, not just like, "Oh my gosh, you have so much candy in a drawer."
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're bad diabetic. I mean, I've heard it called patients bad diabetics frequently. So
to their faces?
Oh no, behind their back.
Behind always. Their backs.
My mantra is there are no bad diabetics. We're all just trying to keep ourselves alive. There may be some that are actively trying to kill themselves, but they're on the installment plan, if you will. But she went and got the doctor and was like, "You're not going to believe this. Come look at this." And he peeked his head and looked in my desk drawer and looked at me and goes, "No wonder you're so happy." And I was like, that right there is what makes a good provider, that understands that life is not over. I still have my favorite candy. As long as I'm eating it in moderation and not going hog wild, which I'm not always great about between the ADHD and just having a dysfunctional pancreas. But So, yeah,
you've over-treated a low or two?
I've over-treated some lows and maybe even some highs. So,
you over-treated highs with candy?
Well, you know, you crave sweets when you're high.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Until you get too high, but he gets it. However, he's been in practice 30 or 40 years. He's not done anything for himself in the practice.
What does that mean? I'm sorry.
Like, he doesn't do the prescriptions. He doesn't, like, the MAs write the prescriptions.
Okay.
And send the prescriptions and everything. So he just signs off on everything. He doesn't understand how the pump technology works. And so even the other day I gave him a pump start order form and it was completely blank. And I just got it back with a signature on it. I'm like, "No, you're supposed to fill it out." He's like, "Oh, I trust you to do that. You got this. You know what you're doing." I'm like, that's all well and good. And I certainly would not trust him to do it, but that's not in my scope of practice.
Is that lazy or is it just inadequate understanding?
He understands because he kind of wears the technology. Mm-hmm. He wears a 5, but in manual. So he understands the early pumping. So
there's an endo who has type 1 diabetes that doesn't really understand how to use the technology.
Exactly.
And is basically just the person who like comes in and waves and says some nice stuff to you and then sends the nurses and tells the nurses to take care of the rest of it.
Yep.
Have you ever heard him give people advice? Is he helpful to people with their diabetes?
It depends on the day. He can be. And he has some things that he says that I think are helpful. Like, "I can't take your diabetes away, but I'm going to have you talk to and she'll help you with some of the technology that can ease the burden a little bit." Mm-hmm. Yeah, diabetes sucks. Like, I've heard him say that a number of times. So he gets it from having lived with it. He's also trying to change the practice a little bit now that it's been acquired, doing less with diabetes and more in some other endocrine areas.
Because they make more money at it, or?
No, I still can't figure that out. It's weird.
Because people, I mean, endos for diabetes are hard to find.
They're very hard to find. They're horrifically undercompensated because, and this is the thing that we're finding since the acquisition, is that the managing diabetes from a provider standpoint is very labor intensive. It takes a lot of time if you're going to pore over the data the way you should and that type of thing. Not just pore over the data, forget the data. If you're talking about DME orders, ongoing prescriptions all the time, it is way more labor intensive than any other. There's nothing else like it.
Yeah.
Even CPAP supplies aren't that labor intensive. Mm-hmm.
I understand what you're saying. I didn't think of it that way, honestly, prior, but there's more to understand. There's more to explain. There's more paperwork to do, more getting people for onto devices and make sure they have their insulin and all this other stuff. Yeah. That and you're not being paid for that.
So, right. Yeah. So that's why the company that I work for puts these point of care specialists in the office to free up the time so the doctor doesn't have to explain the CGM. I go in and do that for him. Hmm. And we'll even put it on if I've got a sample to put on. But he relies on me for all the education. And I'm not trained for that.
What do we really need the doctor for? I mean, maybe except for Oxy, but like, what do we really, if they're just glad handing you coming through and then somebody else in the office is doing all the work on the paperwork side and training you on the stuff, is the doctor just there because they need to be, because we need that degree?
Yeah.
Oh, well, this is all very uplifting. I cursed the moment I thought to make this series, by the way.
I'm sorry.
No, I don't.
There are glimmers, though.
Go ahead.
So there's glimmers of positivity and hope.
Of course.
My story hasn't given many of those glimmers, but there's some other things I'd like to see change. For example, diabetes educators. From what I understand of the certification process that they have to go through, they're only tested on some very antiquated medications. And most of it is about type 2. Mm-hmm. They're still talking PO, glitazone. They're still talking NPH and regular.
Wait, in the States?
Yeah, for the CDCES exam. From what I have heard, I haven't taken the exam yet. I'm also in school for a nursing degree so I can become a CDE, but that's a whole other story.
Okay.
I mean, because I'm pretty much doing it now. I ad lib as I go, which is really wonderful. But that's part of the reason I'm all about experimentation. And I say, find what works for you. Because each and every person is unique. Each and every body is unique. And so we know what works in general. And the doctor says this all the time. We know what works in general. We just got to find out what works for you. And that's why he's pretty laissez-faire when it comes to, oh, it doesn't matter what you put on the pump start. You know, it's close enough. We'll fine tune it as we go. But when we're talking diet, I'm talking to people and I'm like, figure out what food does to you. And then I say, okay, so figure out if eating your food in a different order helps your blood sugar. Mm-hmm. And then I quote the glucose goddess and say, okay, try this and see if this works. And they look at me like, where have you been all my life?
Yeah, just changing my digestion might help this. Like, my God, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you in nursing school right now? Like, where are you at in that journey? I'm
finishing up my prerequisites for a nursing program.
Okay.
So I haven't gotten in yet, but I'm feeling pretty positive about it.
Good for you. So. And then how long will you be in the nursing program?
Oh, I'm all about collecting the associate's degrees. So it'll be an associate's in nursing. I've had enough hours in this endocrine clinic that
should be eligible for the CDCCS test, right?
Well, I think you have to work in nursing for like 2 years. So I'll have to, you know, put around and do something until I can sit for it. I feel like we could have a lot of other people encouraging people with diabetes, not necessarily CDCES, but people with diabetes have a lot of knowledge. There are no dumb diabetics. Mm.
Yeah, you do pick up a lot as you go, that's for sure.
You pick up a lot as you go, but there are no dumb diabetics. Unfortunately, it is a game of survival of the fittest. And if you're not able to make the right choices for your blood sugar, you don't really last as long.
The fittest, you mean as much as being able to like do the things over and over again every day that you need to do?
Well, I mean, like what I mean is the fittest from a smarts standpoint. If you're not smart, you're not surviving.
Oh, I think I get what you're saying. So if people are challenged by the process of managing diabetes, like intellectually challenged by it,
yeah,
and they can't rise to the task, then they're going to have more outcomes that are bad. And that really could shorten their existence. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely. I mean, I knew a guy, I don't know. I don't know how much of the story I really know, but he, a guy from when I was growing up, he was having a low blood sugar and thought it would be a good idea to unfreeze his pipes with a blowtorch.
During his low blood sugar?
Yeah, let's just say that didn't end well.
I don't understand what's happening. All right. Well, what the hell? I mean, I'm really stuck back on the drunk doctor handing out the oxys. Like, it's really crazy.
It's wild. It's been a wild ride. But what I would like to see, back to the CDCES, I would like to see some more specific certifications. So when I became a nuclear medicine technologist, you got your certification and you were a nuclear medicine technologist. A few years later, they came out with some specific certifications so you could specialize in cardiology or PET CT. And you had these areas of specialty. And I would love to see that with the CDCES so that you have people who are a diet specialist or an exercise specialist or a technology specialist. Mm-hmm. Or a type 2 specialist, where you still have to qualify for the entire thing, but it's an extra step to prove that you know more than the average bear about these different topics.
Yeah, that would be a big shift in how it works, because then you have to find a way to bill for those things too. Right, because that's what, I mean,
but
they
don't,
not the doctor, I'm saying that the industry itself, like, they'll come up with new subsets of, I don't know, job titles, if they can bill for it. And you do see that moving that way a little bit with like nurses, right? Like they're more training some nurses for in very specific things.
Yeah.
You know, so that they can say, oh, you know, this person needs this attention from, and we'll have that person go through and do the training or whatever with them. And then that's the thing we can bill for. Like that is really kind of how they think about it. They think about services as billable time.
Right.
Yeah. I don't even know. Like that's, you're pretty far away from getting that accomplished, but.
I know. And I've been told that. You reminded me of something that the first provider that I worked for, she had prescribed me Jardiance. Mm-hmm. And so as we came out of COVID, I had an incident where I was just, we were coming out of COVID and I went outside and was outside all day. But it was one of those cases where you can't take your mask off your face. And so I was way underhydrated and I ended up in euglycemic DKA. I had no idea. I thought I was having a heart attack. Hmm. And because she had put me on this and she had told me, but I completely forgot. I do think that when doctor or any provider prescribes something that's off label, that they need to reiterate at every appointment. Don't forget, you need to stay hydrated, or you need to, don't forget, you're using U500 in a pump, you know, because those reminders can save lives.
So you were on Jardiance, which made being dehydrated more dangerous?
Jardiance is contraindicated in type 1, especially when you get dehydrated. It lends itself to euglycemic DKA.
Why did she give it to you?
Blood sugar control and weight loss. And it was great for both of those, but I forgot to stay hydrated. And I honestly thought I was having a heart attack. But then when I got to the ER and the doctor was like, oh, you're in DKA. And I'm like, my blood sugar is 212. Like, what gives? And it wasn't until a month or two later that I put two and two together and was like, oh, it's the Jardiance. That's what it was. But I bought myself a heart cath because when you're in DKA, you leak troponins, which is a thing that's released when you have heart damage. And so I leaked troponins. And because I went in with heart symptoms, they were like, you got troponins, so we got to do a heart cath. But I'd been worried about my heart for years. And so I got the Clean Bill Health on that. So I was thankful for that whole experience in the end.
Huh. Did a doctor, you know, it's so funny. I find myself saying, did a doctor tell you? But the more of these that I do, I'm like, oh, it's a difference. But did the doctor tell you that the Jardiance was the reason behind what happened to you? Or is it just something you suppose?
I don't remember if I've had a discussion with her or anybody else about it since. But the hindsight's 20/20. And I go, oh, no, I know that that's exactly why that happened. Because I was warned about it way before it happened, that if you're not hydrated enough, you can go into DKA and you won't even know because your blood sugar will be fine.
Yeah, 10 side effects of Jardiance medication commonly used to treat type 2 diabetes and some heart problems. Common Jardiance side effects include UTIs, fungal yeast infection on your genitals, that's fun. More serious Jardiance side effects include dehydration, low blood sugar, and serious infection. Ketoacidosis, too much acid in the blood, is also possible but rare.
When I had that 19 A1C, I had a low while in the ER with the DKA, and they didn't believe that it was low. And my doctor, my endo at the time, was nearing retirement and had only seen that like two or three times in his career. And he's like, your body is just majorly stressed out. And so my body does seem to want to boot me into DKA quicker than most. But that was my first time since being on a pump that I went into DKA. So it's not bad for 24 years of pumping.
No. How do you, knowing what you know and having seen what you've seen in doctor's offices, how do you, moving forward, take doctors seriously? I realize that everybody's not like that. And probably like a using doctor giving out is probably not the norm. I'm not saying that. But like every day, you know what I mean? Like, how do you make the leap then?
So I have a theory about that, or a sneaking suspicion. I've been trained since age 12 that I'm responsible for keeping myself alive. And the doctor I currently work for will tell, well, he told me that caring for type 1 diabetes is 90%. Patient-led and 10% doctor.
Yeah.
And I would say it's even less doctor and more educator or education. We don't relate to MDs or DOs like other patients do. And so I've learned that I have to tread very carefully when I'm dealing with doctors in other specialties or PCPs. Because I've been taught that I am responsible for keeping myself alive, I am very attuned to what's going on in my body. Each of my shoulders has been frozen at different points in my life. And both times I went to a doctor early on and said, hey, I think my shoulder is starting to become frozen. What are we going to do about, what are we doing about this? And they're like, no, it's not frozen. And then 6 months later, I go back and see them. Oh, yeah, now it's frozen. Let's get you into physical therapy. I think cardiologists and are used to playing savior. You give the patient this pill, they take it, everything's better. Diabetes doesn't work like that. And people living with type 1 have a very different relationship to all doctors than other patients. Does that make sense?
It does. And it's something I've noticed, you know, by having these conversations too, that I just interviewed a doctor the other day, really like straight guy, like good stuff, like straight-laced guy, like thoughtful, has type 1, is a peds endo. And, you know, still, like some of the messaging from him was like, you know, don't expect too much from your doctors. And, you know, it's interesting that the way you put it, I agree with. It's, you know, most things that you go to a doctor for are sort of finite. It's like you go for this thing and I'll give you a pill and it'll, you know, take it for 8 days and it'll go away. Or, you know, you have hypothyroidism, take it forever. We'll test your blood sugar test your blood every 6 months, make sure we have your dosing right. Like very like kind of finite stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's no world where you're like, okay, well, every day at every time you open your mouth, we're going to change the dose and you're going to have to figure that out on your own. But so doctors aren't prepared to handle that.
Right.
So the ones that you get lucky, when you get lucky and you get one that is, that's maybe more random than not.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear it. And for reasons that you brought up earlier, because there's not a ton of money in it, you need a lot of time to put into something to help them with their diabetes. Maybe they're not going to put that effort in to begin with.
Right.
Yeah. And some of them are high as a kite. Okay.
Hopefully not many.
What a great story, Veronica. Thanks for coming on the show. This was terrific. I really do appreciate you doing this. Seriously, because
my pleasure.
First of all, no one listening should be like, oh my God, I gotta go find out if my doctor's, you know, smacked out of their mind or not. I'm assuming most of them aren't. But you know what? Day drinking, you know, alcoholism, functional alcoholics, definitely a thing. You know, people using drugs to get through their day is definitely a thing. And why would it not also include doctors, I guess?
Yeah. Doctors aren't immune from that.
Right.
So
just another one of those things you like to imagine isn't happening.
Yeah.
Like, I get it when I'm going to get new tires and the kid at the tire place is stoned. I'm like, okay, I understand. It's okay. He'll be able to get the lug nuts off. I'm all right with this. You just don't think about it in a, you know what I mean? Like, I know the kid getting the carts at the grocery store is just a little high. I'm okay with that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I understand. That I get. Oh, well, hell. I appreciate you doing this very much. Is there anything we left out that we should have talked about that we didn't?
I think the other thing I want the whole world to know is that it's not a test. It's just a check. We're not testing blood sugar. It is not pass or fail. It is just information. And it is information about what's happened in the past. Mm-hmm. The only thing you can do is react and change going forward. You cannot change the past. So keep looking forward. You know, now we've got the arrows with the CGM, and that's great. Can we please stop calling it a test?
Does the verbiage bother you that much? Can you tell
it
me
really does.
Can you tell me why?
Because it's not pass fail. And I feel like probably I've been called a bad diabetic too many times. And you heard me say it earlier. There's no bad diabetics. We're all trying to do the best we can. And for the most part, the ones that are not doing real well haven't been properly educated by their doctors. And there are a few out there that don't care, don't give a rip. And that's on them. That is their choice. There's no need to shame them for that choice. That is on them.
Yeah.
That is not your responsibility. If they want to live that way, they're going to live that way.
Is that something you take on yourself, though? Because, like, I don't know. I don't own a pool, but I know somebody who does, and you have to test your pool water. Now, nobody's thinking, like, oh, I'm going to test my pool water to see if I've passed or I've failed. Like, is that, are we just not commingling thoughts? Like, I get the idea. I know you don't want to be judged every 5 seconds and that a number is just data, and I completely agree with you. But, I mean, if someone were to call it test your blood sugar, like, why would that set you off? Is that because of past experiences you've had, you think?
Probably.
Yeah.
And I just, I think that words matter and how we talk about it matters. That I don't want to feel like I have to do 10 tests a day if I'm not wearing a CGM. And I feel bad for people that have test anxiety. What's funny is, as I'm in school, I love the tests. I want to know where I'm at. I don't want to know with my blood sugar, but hey, when I'm at school, yeah, I want to know how I'm doing.
But also, Veronica, you know there are other people who aren't bothered by the word, right?
No, I know there aren't, but I feel bad for anybody who hasn't really thought through it and processed it and starts seeing that, oh, it's a test. Oh, I got a test again.
Can I ask a question? If I say to you, hey, Veronica, you got to check your blood sugar, and then you check it and then it's 250, that doesn't feel like a failure to you because I said check and not test? See what I'm saying? Like, what's the difference? I don't understand that. It feels like just a word to me, but I don't know because I also, I'm not in your position.
I think because it's not pass fail. Like, it's not, there's no grade. It's, you're just checking to see the status.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
You can't just be testing to see the status?
So, yeah, I don't know.
I feel like I'm coming off as difficult. And I don't mean to be because I completely agree with you. So, yeah.
I'm a verbal processor and I haven't gotten there yet. And you're asking the right questions to get me there. I don't know. It just bothers me.
Yeah. It feels like to me that something happened to you at some point and now you have an unkind relationship with the word in this context. But I mean, there are plenty of people who don't. And so that's where we get into this weird thing with, like, you know, you see people online, like, don't call it don't say I'm diabetic. That was a thing for a while. People like, don't call me diabetic. I'm not diabetic. I have diabetes. I got to be honest with you. I don't see the difference. So you know what I mean?
Well, I will say that my husband worked with children with autism for a while. And mm-hmm. he's like, they are not autistic. That does not define them. I am not defined by my diabetes. So occasionally I will say I'm diabetic, but typically no, I've lived with diabetes for a hell of a long time and I'm over it.
Yeah. I think a lot of those words come down to, like, intent when the person's speaking it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I can imagine a way where I could call somebody a diabetic in a pejorative way.
Yeah.
But to just say that person is a diabetic, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I'm not sure, just because I don't know how to, like, feel. Like, I've been overweight in my life. If you would have said to me, Scott's fat, I would have been like, yeah, I am. You know what I mean? Like, if you would have called me a fat person, I would have said, oh, that's accurate. I mean, I wouldn't have liked it. You know what I mean?
I think there are some stigmas with diabetes that don't need to be there. Mm-hmm. And some of those stigmas are more about type 2, but they get placed on type 1.
Okay.
I am so sick to death of people telling me what I can and can't eat.
And that happens in your life.
Shut the hell up.
Yeah. People tell you you shouldn't be eating something.
Yeah. You can't eat that. You're diabetic. No, first of all, I am a diabadass. Mm-hmm. And secondly, you're not my doctor. So shut up.
Do you not take them as verbalizing their thoughts? Like, you can't eat that. I always expect is them in their brain going, oh, I didn't think she could eat that. She has diabetes. And then it comes out of their mouth that way.
So I use it as an opportunity to educate and say, no, really, I can. I just take a little more insulin for it. Mm-hmm. And so I do use it as an opportunity to educate, but sometimes I do get snarky because.
Well, it's a pain in the ass to hear over and over again. That's obvious. Yeah. It's not your job to educate every person who notices you,
right.
You know, eating. I mean, I take all your points. I am just playing devil's advocate. I hope people know I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm going to get a note here from somebody. It's like, it's, you know.
I love playing devil's advocate, right. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the ways I've described my diabetes is that the first 10 years I fought against it. The second 10 years I was like, oh, I guess I was kind of resigned to it. Now I'm leaning into it and I'm making diabetes my bitch, mm-hmm. and I'm using it to encourage other people.
Good for you. That's excellent.
So I'm trying.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you got to that part. Seriously. What do you think stopped you from getting to it quicker?
So I've blamed the diabetes on a lot. But I honestly now am thinking that the ADHD was a legitimate thing. And I had no plans for my future after high school. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to college right away. So I had a teacher in high school that said, she was the music teacher. And she was like, I will play at your wedding if you accomplish a number of things before you get married. You need to travel the world and you need to have a college degree and you something else. I don't know what. You need to know the person at least a year or two or something. And so I took that seriously and I traveled the world before I was 15. I didn't get my college degree ever. She still played at my wedding. So diabetes has not been it's a weird dichotomy here. It's not been a limitation to me, but it has been such a limitation to me. I've limited myself because of it, but early on I didn't. When I was 14, I said, hey, mom and dad, I saw this thing in this magazine about a mission trip. Can I do that? And they were like, sure, if they accept you and if you can raise the money. And I think they thought I wouldn't get accepted into this mission organization. Well, when I was 14, I went to the Amazon rainforest for 8 weeks with a bunch of people my parents didn't know.
Oh, geez.
When I was 15, I went around the world. Most of it on the Trans-Siberian Express, flew from the U.S. to Ireland to Moscow, took the train all the way across Siberia, even went in a Siberian prison at one point. And then on the other side from Khabarovsk, flew to Anchorage, to San Francisco, and back to the East Coast.
But while you're doing all that, you're not managing your type 1, really.
I was doing okay. High school early years were okay. It wasn't until later in high school, that was early high school. Later in high school, it started to fall apart. First college I went to, I ended up in DKA, and the doctor in that other state was like, we need to get you on an insulin pump. And I went back to my home state, and my regular endo was like, no, you don't have good enough control. And so I went through that for a couple of years until I moved away from my hometown. 10 states away or something, and ended up in DKA twice in 6 months, got myself an endo who was like, let's get you on a pump yesterday. And then I got married and now I'm stuck, happily stuck, but mm-hmm. stuck nonetheless in this state and with a bunch, I've had great endos and not so great endos here in my current state. And it's been a dream.
Well, it's quite a journey. I appreciate you sharing it with us very much.
My pleasure.
Sincerely. Thank you. Hold on for me for 1 second, okay?
Absolutely.
I want to thank the Eversense CGM for sponsoring this episode of the Juicebox Podcast. Learn more about its implantable sensor, smart transmitter, and terrific mobile application at eversensecgm.com/juicebox. Get the only implantable sensor for long-term wear. Get Eversense. A huge thanks to Omnipod, not just my longest sponsor, but my first one. Omnipod.com/juicebox. If you love the podcast and you love tubeless insulin pumps, this link is for you. Omnipod.com/juicebox. A huge thanks to US Med for sponsoring this episode of the Juicebox Podcast. Don't forget, usmed.com/juicebox. This is where we get our diabetes supplies from. You can as well. Use the link or call 888-721-1514. Use the link or call the number, get your free benefits check so that you can start getting your diabetes supplies the way we do from US Med. The Juicebox Podcast is full of so many series that you want and need. After Dark, Ask Scott and Jenny, Algorithm Pumping, Bold Beginnings, Defining Diabetes, Defining Thyroid, the Diabetes Pro Tip Series for Type 1, the Diabetes Variable Series, Mental Wellness, Type 2 Diabetes Pro Tip, How We Eat. Oh my goodness, there's so much at juiceboxpodcast.com. Head up into that menu and pick around. And if you're in the private Facebook group, just go to the feature tab for lists upon lists of all of the series. Always free, always helpful. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back soon with another episode of the Juicebox Podcast. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording. WrongWayRecording.com.